But now I want to talk about the double act that you guys do. Close-up magic and mentalism act. Are you doing it right now?
Yeah. Yeah, if you're reading my mind, I'm bored.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 20th year, number 1001, Napier and Esslin. This week is the second part of our conversation with Annoyance Theatre's founder and directors Mick Napier and Jennifer Esslin, who, in addition to all their work teaching and improvising and directing and running the Annoyance Theatre, also perform a mentalism and magic act known as Napier and Esslin. Our live conversation last week on stage at the Annoyance continued with Mick and Jen explaining where they got the inspiration to start performing mentalism and close-up magic.
So we saw a gentleman named Mark Salem in the Village in New York 25, 30 years ago, and he did this thing, and I leaned over to Jennifer and said, I want to learn how to do that, and that launched our interest in mentalism. So we developed a two-person act, and we do it here and there. I would consider us hobbyists, but we do, you know, do it professionally as well.
Well, and we saw you do your act at the Chicago Magic Lounge, right?
Yeah.
Magic Lounge,
is yeah. That, say that that's right? The Chicago Magic Lounge. We did a run there for a month, yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Chicago Magic Lounge is also one of the best kept secrets here in Chicago.
It really is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to go and take friends from out of town who are tired of going to whatever, the Goodman or the Bean or whatever.
Yeah. Great date place.
A great date place. Well, great. Tell us all the tricks involved with mentalism.
Well, we do quite a few. Jennifer will be blindfolded.
Uh-huh.
I'll go to the audience and have them produce any objects they want. And Jennifer will be able to tell them like what the color of the object is, what it's made of, what the object itself is, and
right.
Stuff like that. She'll be able to discern what the serial code is on a bill.
That's incredible.
I'm doing a thing for like the third time, I think. I'll see if I can describe it quickly. I have someone take a clump of playing cards from my hands. I look at the bumps and try to figure out which ones are missing. Then I have another person come up on stage and multiply a two-digit number by itself five times to arrive at a number between 200,000 and 10 billion, and they write that on a board. And then I try to call out which playing cards this person's holding and try to figure out the two-digit number that arrived at that large number while reciting Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven out loud.
And are these...
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's hard. I've done it three times. I'm going to do it the fourth time here in a couple of weeks.
If you think hearing him describe it is amazing, watching him do it is even more amazing. Are these skills you had already? Did you develop these skills? This is like juggling, a thing you practice, you learn how to do a thing, and then how does this, are magicians born or made? I guess is my question.
Wow, that was a loaded question. I describe magic as, I can't believe someone went to that much trouble to do that.
Yes, okay.
And when we start our show is introduced like this. Hi, we're Napier and Esslin. I'm Mick Napier.
I'm Jennifer Esslin.
And in the history of mankind, we don't believe that anything psychic has ever, ever happened.
But for the next little while, we're going to pretend as if we do.
And that covers us in case people think we're psychic. And we don't, you know, we don't like to support the idea of psychic stuff and spiritualism and all that stuff.
Right.
We don't believe in it, so.
Right. Well, Jennifer, same question for you. Were these tricks, and I don't mean that in a reductive way, but I mean, were these skills you had to learn, or always from a child, from a young age?
Not from being a child, but while I was in New York, coincidentally, and it sort of did end up being one of those things that said, okay, well, I guess I could sort of use those skills. Coincidentally, I, for a little while in New York, was a telephone psychic.
Oh, really?
So I agree. Yes. They are fake.
What?
Fake. Princeton's psychic combine. And my name was Vanessa Sawyer, and I was British. Because I was newer, my hours were from midnight until 6 in the morning. So I would take the calls that came in from midnight to 6. And I would lie in bed and made my light on a dimmer. That was pretty great. And I would have the phone next to my bed, and it would just ring at like 2 in the morning or something. And I'd, "Hello, this is Kenny Kingston, Psychic Hotline. This is Vanessa. Can I help you?"
Beautiful. And that started this. And was that also drawing more on your improv skills?
Yeah. I mean, it was using some skills that psychics or people who claim to be psychic definitely use, and so I learned some of those techniques.
Well, and speaking of these skills and techniques, listening does some of it, and I don't want you to give things away, but I'm curious, does some of the act revolve around subtle signals that people give off without even knowing that they're giving it off? Are you reading body language? Are you reading individuals' words? You're reading what they're not saying, what they are saying?
Sometimes. That can certainly help, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, mostly it's just like tricks, you know.
Yeah, but tricks, even the times I've seen you do close-up magic or we've been to the magic lounge, you know, I don't know how they did it. I'm sure that there's a trick that they practiced for years and years and years, but it's done, it's executed with such skill and dexterity and aplomb. I'm still dazzled, I'm still impressed, you know?
Yeah, and there's certain kinds of magic, like coin magic, that I enjoy so much that I purposely don't want to learn about it, don't want to know about it. I want to still enjoy the magic of it and all that.
Maybe that's why I don't improvise. I want to be able to enjoy the magic, or it could be I'm just terrible at it.
It's real interesting because people sometimes want to know the trick, and then they learn the trick, and then they're disappointed that they know it.
Right.
And that's kind of a metaphor that if you measure the fun you're in too much, or if you analyze it too much, it kind of dissipates the very fun you're in. Which I, of course, created a metaphor to improvisation. The more you measure it while you're improvising and in your head, the less playful you'll be. Which I could also reckon to like a trip to an amusement park when you're with someone that keeps saying, "Isn't this fun?" And it's not, because they keep saying it. So all of that, you know, is just all.
I love that idea is in the ether and that we're thinking about it, because the new Marvel series Wonder Man, anybody? Nobody, just me. I just finished watching it, and it's all about how overthinking gets in the way of your artistry.
Wow!
And gets in the way. It gets in the way of the enjoyment of the artistry.
Completely. Like, can you imagine having sex with someone and they're constantly going, "Are you having? Are you having fun? Is this fun? Aren't we having fun?" No, we're not. I'm having fun. Imagining a chainsaw in your face.
Wait, you don't like that?
We are learning so much tonight.
So little.
Hi. This is Rich Fulcher, Bob Fossil from the Mighty Boosh on BBC America, and you're listening to the Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In this first half of 2026, we'll be performing all the great books abridged in Reston, Virginia, and Sault Ste. Marie in Holland, Michigan. And we're finally returning to the UK with a newly reimagined production directed by RSE founding member Adam Long of the show that started it all, the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged to more than 30 cities, including Chipping Norton, Basingstoke, Worcester, Epsom, Coventry, Huddersfield, Salisbury, Bristol, Guildford, Lichfield, Southampton, Poole, Hartford, Bedford, Tunbridge Wells, Newbury, Taunton, Exeter, Northampton, Bolton, Watford, Oxford, Ipswich, Bury St. Edmunds, Keswick, Newcastle, Doncaster, Wakefield, and York. Check out the touring page at our website, ReduceShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with those dazzling mentalists and close-up magicians and the founder and directors of Chicago's Annoyance Theater, Mick Napier and Jennifer Eslin.
Does have any questions?
I have a question, Nick. What's like your takeaway after so many years? It's amazing that you guys are still doing it. Oh my God, I've known you for a long time.
Yep, I know.
And I know the young Nick would never have said, I'm gonna be doing this 40 years later, 30 years later.
If the microphones didn't pick you up, what would the young Mick say to the old Mick now after having run the Annoyance and done such good work for so long?
I think the combination of like congratulations and what the hell are you doing or what the hell did you do?
Yeah.
I remember, and I'll be very candid about this, like my philosophy has changed, I've changed, I've certainly grown older, but I did an interview for The Reader with Jack Helbig 30 years ago, and I have that article, and in that article I said the quote, "The last thing on earth I want to do is herald in a new group of young talent to the Annoyance." And that was at a time where I had a very, very empirical belief that we as an ensemble were going to stay together and create together for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
I was 26 or 27 at that time that I said that. And you know, that's changed. And that's all we've done is, you know, foster new people and stuff like that. We feel, Jennifer and I, hate children, but we feel like that we've had, you know, some
That's legit. I mean, it's a strangely paternal feeling, even though they're not your biological children. I totally get it.
Yeah, so it's been really an interesting journey. What are my takeaways, do you ask? And that is that I don't have any regrets with that, but I have a lot of regrets about a lot of things, and I'm real honest about that. I don't have any regrets about it. I've evolved a little bit. I jokingly say that improvisation is a hobby that went way south.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that.
Yeah.
I've grown to not enjoy comedy at all. I can't watch it. I try. My friends are on shows and stuff. I try to watch it and it's really tough. The stuff I laugh at, like if I go to a film and laugh, it's probably a torture porn.
Yes.
That makes me laugh. Jennifer.
Yeah. And what are your takeaways, Jen?
Well.
Or are you still in the midst of taking them away now?
I think I'm still taking away. I think for me, over time, it's changed from being something that sort of happened as a result of. There needed to be somebody who was going to keep the Annoyance going at a time when we had lost our space, and I had just come back from New York, and so it became something that sort of I fell into, and then it became more, this is actually what I'm doing, and there's a purpose to it, and I guess more intentional. And so, and similarly, I didn't have the expectation that it would be that we would repeat the cycle over and over of the different groups that come and then they go and then they come and then they go, and that's been a great and also difficult sometimes thing. Just it's hard to watch, to sort of like take people in and watch them develop artistically and watch their journey and then they're gone.
Yeah.
Now if I have to like have another dinner where I'm saying that. Amazing. So the place is looking good in Brooklyn. That's so cool. I think the valley's boring, going to like going away parties and
yeah.
Last night to Second City and all that.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Matt, did you have a question?
I'll go off of that question. With all the changes throughout the decades and with your change, what has stayed consistent? Like, what are the core strategies I'll use for engaging audiences with the magic that you're doing? What has stayed the same? What's the core strategies?
What core strategies have you learned about or kept using over these years?
I think honestly, it's been allow the people who are here to create what they have to say. Like, don't. I think a huge mistake would have been for us to say, it has to be this style show all the time, or it has to be this type of creativity. It really is, and the thing that to me makes it fun still ever is that whoever is here at the time is able to create what they want to create and have it be specific to themselves as opposed to doing what the last group of people did.
Well, and that leads into the conversation that Dee and I were having
about the corporatization of comedy here in Chicago specifically, and maybe theater nationwide. Both Second City and IO, and possibly UCB, I think, have been bought now by hedge funds, by people who like the name, the brand name, but have no idea how the work happens, how the work gets done, how the value in these names is created. And you just said it, Jen, that the value of the annoyance is the generations of people who keep coming through here. Am I right about that?
I think so. I believe so. And I think that there's always the same amount of talent in Chicago. I think that people would like to judge that and go, well, you know, back in the day and all that. I feel like there's always pretty consistent quality of comedy, especially in Chicago. And as far as the corporate nature of the city, that has changed a lot. Second City was bought by a private investment firm. IO was purchased by two realtors, so they weren't really a private investment. What's that?
No.
Yeah, developers.
Okay.
And Jennifer and I actually helped get IO back into business after these gentlemen bought it. They came to us and solicited our help to hire a new staff, kind of like introduce them to what that culture was. That's changed a bit. My desire to create, I used to have this fervor in me to make it all okay between Second City, IO, the annoyance, and the whole community. And I still have that desire, but I don't have that fervor anymore because it feels so disparate and it feels a bit sterile. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure how to tap into that.
Yeah.
I'm proud that Jennifer and I are essentially of those bigger sketch comedy improv organizations, like the only mom and pop owned in a weird way.
Yeah.
And we kind of relish in that and stuff.
That's great. No, that's great. That's great. That's great. Does anybody else have any questions? But yeah.
Jennifer, to confirm, Miss Cleo is a fake.
Yes, I'm sorry.
My childhood has been ruined.
All right.
My second question.
I'm sure she believes that she's not a fake.
Who's that?
Fair.
And in fact, when I got the job for Kenny Kingston's Psychic Hotline, I had to audition for the three. For the family that owned it, there were two sisters and a brother, and I am convinced that they believe that they are hiring psychic people.
So you had to convince them first that you were psychic.
Yes, and so I did a reading for the brother and one of the sisters, and then the brother told the second sister that they have a real talent, and so she made me do two readings for her because she was convinced that I had the gift.
Well, you do have a gift. It's just not the one that they think you have. Yeah. What was the second part?
My second part was, I know obviously Mickey said that you quote unquote didn't want to raise the next generation of, obviously that's not true, you kind of have.
Yeah.
Was there a year or a particular group of people that when you watched them perform on this stage of the annoyance, when you were like, wow, I am so proud of how far we've come. Like, did you have that gotcha moment? Where did you get that gotcha moment?
It's not really just different groups of people, but different shows have kind of caught my eye here, and then individuals have along the way. What's that? Swear Jar, yeah. When I was directing 80 Bryant and Vanessa Bard for the same show, I'm like, there's something going on here. And then Connor O'Malley, he and I became really good friends. Connor and I are kind of tied to each other for life because there was at a very young age, like 18 years ago, we made a bet that if he would like lose a tremendous amount of weight, I would stop smoking at 3 packs a day. And I did, and I haven't smoked since, and he's in better shape than me, so.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Connor's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life, and it was so great that he and 80, you know, are together and all that. So there's certain people and certain shows, but there's so many people here that there's not like, oh my gosh, that ensemble is something to see. The different shows and different individuals and stuff, I really like, okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's incredible. Any other questions for,
so what is the difference between, I know you're not directing so much anymore, but what, I think, because I've known you so long, like, when you went left and you started doing TV, everyone thought you were going to stay in New York or go to LA. What brought you back, and what, and did you enjoy, I mean, obviously the money must have been great,
It was in New York. I worked on a show called Exit 57, and that was with Amy Sedaris and Steve Colbert and Mitch Rouse and Jody Lennon and Paul Canello. And that was a great time. That was for 2 years. And that was on Comedy Central. So I had a love-hate relationship with it. And by the time that was over, and I also directed an off-Broadway show that David Sedaris wrote, and Amy was in it. So all of that was really great. And I came back to Chicago because primarily the annoyance. And I was kind of tired of being on that island, New York. And I also, the television environment, I wasn't sure about it, and kind of made me uneasy. Since then, I've worked on three other television shows. By the third one in LA, and I was an EP on an NBC sketch show, sketch pilot, I was texting Jennifer, "I hate this. I am too angry of a person to do this. I can't pretend I respect these people." Like, if I had to hear one more editor look back at me and go, "Wouldn't it be funny?" And the answer is always, "No, it isn't. It wouldn't be." Or any producer, or you know, to do one shot of comedy and then have 10 people at Video Village talk 20 minutes about it, just, you know, overanalyze them.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, having sex, like, "Isn't this fun?" No, it's not. And you're not fun, and you're not funny, and I hate you. And I describe Los Angeles as a place where the sun torments you as you wait for nothing. That's the way I felt there.
So many great aphorisms to go out on tonight.
What was your favorite space? You guys have been all over the city. What was your favorite space?
Which is the favorite location that you've had, that the Annoyance Theater has been in all these years?
Well, the first one on Broadway and Briar, when I was 27 and way out of my league for getting a theater, had a beautiful deck on it, and I lived in an A-frame house above it. Yeah. So there was a gay pride one day that might answer your question, where it was a beautiful sunshiny day, as most gay prides are, because God shines down on gay pride day for some reason.
Yes, she does.
Yes, they do. Anyway, it was a beautiful day, gay pride, parade, 47 of us on this deck, tripping on acid. And that was a great day. And I look back at that space, it's kind of like an Andy Warhol wannabe kind of place where a lot, like 60 people at Keys, people were in and out all the time. And it had an A-frame house like a ski chalet, and it had a fireplace like a ski chalet. So it was just crazy. A lot of fun, a lot of drinking, and a lot
of crazy
jokes.
Was that the same year that Rich Fulcher ate all the beans?
Yes, that was that. That was actually on a gay pride day.
I know, we were there for that one.
You were not.
We were there.
You were not
there. That explains everything.
Yes.
I guess that's nostalgically my favorite. I do like this space so much, though.
This space has a great location.
Yeah. And Belmont, you know, Clark, it's great.
Yeah. Jennifer, do you the same?
I think probably this space is my favorite overall because we were able to do two theaters and have a bar. But I also love the Clark Street space because there were all these little cool areas to do different things, and I just liked all the different ways that we could use the space there.
I've taken two improv classes in my life, one with Jimmy Carrey a couple of years ago, somewhere farther north, and one on the Broadway space from the great and good Scott Robinson.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day. Yeah. And one of those kinds of teachers that you just want to...
With, huh? Horry Pismo from The Lampshades.
Yes, Horry Pismo from
AKA.
AKA. That's what a great poll.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. You can watch the video of our entire live Annoyance Theater event, complete with subtitles, over on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/ReducedShakespeareCo. You can also find out more about the Annoyance Theater's year-round shows and classes by going to theannoyance.com. Mick Napier also offers online improv classes over at improvfiend.com. And this Saturday night, Napier and Esslin will be performing their Mentalism Magic Double Act on Valentine's Day at the Center for Inquiry in Los Angeles. Go to centerforinquiry.org for more information. Then send us your magical surprises via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to Ladder on Chin Balancer Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Dries, although it could be Dries Bessels. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Annoyance Theater alum and star of the Mighty Boosh, Rich Fulcher. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 1001 3,000 1/3 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Thank you for helping me celebrate, you guys. Thank you. And thank you all for coming. You're done. Good night.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.